You can't mistake their anthology, a Girls Aloud commentary podcast from The Record Doctor.
Whenever you're ready.
Hello again, fellow Alouders, and welcome to episode 2 of the world's first ever Girls Aloud commentary podcast. You can't mistake their anthology. Pointing the magnifying glass on 20 years of pure pop excellence as we fast approach the girls' 20th anniversary, a world of great pop tunes and unforgettable moments across these past two decades. If you missed the introductory New Year's Eve episode, that was just a bit of light fun, I guess, before the real work was to begin. This pod plans to cover every single release from the girls, the albums, the concerts, the TV specials, the books, and even the solo releases that would come from the most important pop group of the 21st century. There won't be a tabloidy focus with the podcast either, unless it directly pertains to the girls' music and output as a band. It's not really fodder for the pod. Enough has been said about the group for the past two decades on a personal front via the UK press, and I don't want to add to any of those narratives. Look, it's no secret I absolutely worship the ground the girls walk on, so much so I decided to dedicate 24 plus episodes of a monthly bloody podcast to them. So it shouldn't really be a surprise that type of content, so to speak, is just a bit off limits around here, eh? Anywho, now that I've gotten that out of the way, last month I took the ride solo, but going forward I plan to be joined by one guest or another to talk all about these mighty women, what they did for pop music and continue to do for their fans, some of which you will meet over the next few months. The podcast's very first ever guest, however, is the perfect person to join me for episode 2. He is one of my dearest friends and also a friend who adored Girls Aloud from the start. He has also appeared on my weekly radio show, The Record Doctor, worked in radio himself before, is a well-respected book reviewer with his partner Phil on Instagram, and even had a stint as an iconic drag queen here in Australia back in the day. It is my absolute pleasure to welcome the delightful Craig onto You Can't Mistake Their Anthology. Ahoy, doll, how are you?
Hello, and thank you for that wonderful introduction.
Oh, of course. I'm so happy to have you on the show. Thank you so much for joining me on this very important episode of the podcast, I must say.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's an honor, and I'm so excited to be here.
Yes, me too. It's going to be a very, very good episode. Obviously, the pod is telling the story in chronological order. So naturally, today, we will be diving as deep as we can into the girls' creation on reality competition series Pop Stars The Rivals. But more so, and more importantly, diving deeper into their debut single and album of the same name, Sound of the Underground, as well as the rest of the era's singles, No Good Advice, Life Got Cold, and Jump. I mean, what a pop force, Craig. I know these girls mean as much to you as they do to me.
Oh, they mean everything. And they still do to this very day.
Before we do get into the business side of things, Craig, I just have to address this before we do start. Throwing myself back into that world of the Girls Aloud debut era and group beginnings really was very hard to do in light of our dear Sarah Harding's passing. I found myself watching old episodes of Popstars Arrivals and bawling, not during Sarah's performances, but like right after, when Davina would stand with her as she read out the number for viewers at home to call to save Sarah and keep her in the group. Or singular frames in the video clip that would just set off another teary sesh. All very bittersweet now, which I think is an understandable thing to be feeling right now as fans of the girls. Bitter for very obvious reasons and sweet for the undeniable magic we were gifted to over the last 19 years.
I'm with you there. It's like I was doing some revision today and watching those clips, it's like the tears started. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's just such a tragedy. Yeah,
it's been very hard. It's still very raw for many of us. And while revisiting the world of Girls Aloud for the pod has been very hard at times, what I want to do with this podcast, I think, is so important in all honesty. The legacy of Girls Aloud is something that needs to be cemented into the world of podcasting on a more dedicated level, which I really hope that I, along with my wonderful guests such as yourself, Craig, can do that as we cover each era month by month.
Oh, it's going to be such fun.
Popstars The Rivals was a British music reality TV competition series that ran from September through to December of 2002. 2001 saw the Popstars franchise first launch in the UK, following the same formula the Australian Popstars would take in its second season. Boys and girls across the land auditioned for the co-ed pop group that would eventually become Hearsay. But in 2002, the franchise took an interesting turn, not seen anywhere else around the globe, as the reality show beamed across television sets in its various formats. The aim of Popstars, The Rivals, was to whittle the auditionees down to 10 girls and 10 guys, throw them in houses together and make them battle it out week by week with live shows, as 10 girls eventually became 5, and 10 blokes also became 5. Then the real battle for the highly sought after UK Christmas number one would ultimately decide the show's winning group. Hosted by the incredible British TV icon and all-round legend Davina McCall, and judged by Spice Girl Jerry Halliwell, Irish pop manager Louis Walsh, who would manage the girl group, and one third of Stock Aitken Waterman, Pete Waterman, who would manage the boys. UK and Irish pop heavy hitters helping create two pop groups, one of which would become one of the biggest of all time.
I've always had an obsession with girl groups. So for me, as soon as they said Popstars, The Rivals, I was on board instantly.
Yes. Oh, totally.
And, girl, you know, loving the show from here. So.
Right, exactly. Which was definitely harder to do in the age of the internet back then.
When you needed to set your
much
VHS
slower connections and you needed to sort of know where to look.
Yes.
As the girls and guys battled it out week by week and each went from 10 members to 6, the big reveal for our heroines came on the night of the girls' final, November the 30th in 2002, when all 6 left remaining girls would perform for their final spot in the band. And one of the 6, Javeen Hilton, was a huge fan favourite. I think a lot of people were really expecting her to get in. But on that fateful night of the girls' creation, the cosmos and the voting public, more importantly, placed Cheryl Tweedy, Nicola Roberts, Nadine Coyle and Kimberly Walsh into 4 of the 5 slots in that final pop group. With 2 remaining gals left standing, it was now between speculated fan favourite Javeen Hilton and Sarah Harding.
Mm. Kimberly and Nicola didn't almost make the top 10, actually.
Right,
yeah,
yes.
There was an incident with someone else, and then there was pregnant Hazel, who slightly lied about her age, which we've heard a story about that before.
Which, yes, I believe that, but believe that story may have been told on episode 1 of You Can't Mistake Their Anthology. Unbelievable how that pop star's legacy creates people lying about their age. In a very tense evictee reveal, Davina McCall announced to the world and to the girls on the stage that out of those 2 standing on that stage, it was Sarah who'd made the band, which saw a visibly stunned Javeen very obviously trying to grapple with what seemed to be the unthinkable, that she'd not made it into the band.
I think that was a good thing in the long run, because we would never have got that fantastic song that she did, Real Things.
Right, that's a great song.
So,
and also, God knows whether Girls Aloud, how long they would have stuck around, like, had she gone through in, you know, you never know how these things go. So I think that they made the right choice.
Yeah, I agree.
One of the very few times that a voting public have made the right choice in a very long time.
Yeah, no, you're right. I did have a soft spot for Amy.
Right.
But
okay, yes.
She did join her own group with the other
inductees.
But yeah, it's Javeen was, I don't know, she had a fantastic voice. She was great, but she just didn't fit the mold.
Right. The boys, having been formed the week before on the competition, were called One True Voice, which, I mean, even then, surely Pete Waterman knew that they were serving up boredom and an obviously very, very short shelf life. But at one point, and unbelievably, the guys were kind of the public favourites to get that beloved Christmas number one. But honestly, the girls were about to come in hard and absolutely obliterate them.
Yeah, very hard. I really think that the girls, even the ones that didn't make the group, were much, much stronger than the guys.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
It was just a boring snooze fest with the guys from start to finish.
It was nothing new.
So now the real work began. Very quickly, Cheryl announced with the band that they'd named themselves Girls Aloud. Aloud spelt, as Chez would go on to say, A-L-O-U-D. The girls got to work on all the makings of a great pop group, and naturally, all great pop groups come with great pop songs. The boys opted for double A-side Sacred Trust, a song originally from Australia's Bee Gees, and Waterman co-write After You're Gone to be their lead single. I guess with an emphasis on the Bee Gees cover more than anything else. I'll follow my heart right up to the end, as far as the eye can see. The girls, however, the girls were about to strike absolute gold with not only a song worthy of that Christmas number one, but an artist and writer slash producer relationship that would go on to produce the most incredible British pop songs of all time.
I don't know whether you noticed, but I noticed watching it today that Cheryl, Nicola and Kimberly were sort of, even back then, they had this bond. If you look closely at some of those scenes where they're dancing and on the couch and stuff, they've got that bond together. Like forming already.
Yes.
That would last, obviously, the 20 years and still continuing to this very day.
I also noticed how happy Cheryl and Nicola were when Nadine's name was announced.
Yes.
It was really lovely seeing that.
Yeah. It's interesting to watch it back, knowing what we know now and picking up on it from back then.
Hitting the streets and the promotional circuit with a cheeky and very combative slogan, "Buy Girls," that's B-U-Y Girls, and "Buy Boys," B-Y-E Boys. It was a slogan that would forever cement the girls into pop history and matched up exceptionally well with everything their debut single delivered. The song in question, called Sound of the Underground, was originally recorded in 2001 by failed pop group Orchid and was one of over 60 songs UK songwriting and production force Xenomania's Brian Higgins and Miranda Cooper would write with the plan to start their own girl group. But Orchid disbanded before they could even land a proper record deal, so the track went back into the rotation of trying to find a pop star home. It said the track was then offered to Samantha Mumba, due to be her big comeback moment, but in the end, she went with UK Top 5 I'm Right Here, and look, thankfully so. Back into that rotation, Sound of the Underground found its way into pop star's judge and girls' manager, Louis Walsh's hands, and it was chosen as Girls Aloud's very first single. Released on the 16th of December 2002, Girls Aloud's Sound of the Underground was exactly that. Delivering the sound of the club world underground and giving it a pop glisten it had never seen before. Deeply rooted in drum and bass and soaking in the sound of electric guitar, drum and bass is a bombastically loud and forward genre within the dance music umbrella. Sound of the Underground bared a somewhat of a resemblance to the last time drum and bass had been this beautifully pop. 1998's Australian release from Josh Abrahams and a then unknown Amiel, in the UK simply known as Pure Tone, with the track Addicted to Bass. And that's no accident. Songwriter Miranda Cooper went on record to say she'd been heavily into drum and bass at the time and was inspired by the Pure Tone track when writing Sound of the Underground.
What about my weakness? I'm totally addicted to bass. Wow, wow.
Oh. Bass was a sassy dance pop crossover and an important spotlight on drum and bass in the commercial. But in comparison to Sound of the Underground, as poppy as it was, it hadn't managed to fuse the two worlds as originally as Xenomania would on Sound of the Underground. There is an undeniable magic for me about this song where I just feel exactly the same way I did the first time I heard it, every single time I listen to it. As combative as their Bye Girls, Bye Boy slogan may have been, nothing was as combative or as exciting as the song that would be their debut.
Well, I have a confession to make there.
Oh, do tell.
Yes, I didn't actually like it when I first heard it. I thought it had great vocals. I thought the girls looked great. The makeovers were great, even though they heavily darkened Nadine's hair.
Oh, I know.
But I don't know. I was just, I suppose you could say, a bit underwhelmed.
Right.
I agree with what you're saying now, how it was sassy and bombastic. But when I first heard it back in the day, it was just, I was like, yeah, just very underwhelmed. And it was like, oh, okay. You know, but I didn't give up on them, obviously. But yeah, it was just a bit lackluster for me. And that's, now I love it. I think it's an incredible song, just at the time on first hearing it.
Well, a lot of the time, a lot of people, I remember over the years when a new Girls Aloud single would drop and people on the forums would be like, you know, it took me like about 7 or 8 listens to actually get the track.
Yeah,
or
that I can totally understand.
And that's, I think that's where the most genius songs within that Xenomania bracket lie.
Yeah. No, you're right. And it's incredible now. And it'll always go down as a song that, you know, started to shape music of the early
2000s. I wonder if anyone listening to the pod felt the same way as you did, Craig. Let us know in the podcast Instagram account just by commenting on a post or something like that. It's at Aloud Anthology Podcast, all one word. But yeah, let us know. I'd love to hear if anyone else felt the same way. The pop star saga, as there was still a chart battle to play out. On the big finale, airing December the 22nd, 2002, viewers everywhere were glued to their television sets as they waited the official word from the UK singles chart on where Girls Aloud and One True Voice would place on the charts with their respective singles. It was then revealed that with 150,000 copies sold, boy band One True Voice had come in at number 2 on the charts, and with 215,000 copies sold, girl group Girls Aloud had come in at number 1. Before we do move on to the celebration of that and the rest of the Girls Aloud debut era story, I would like to circle back to the chart placements. More importantly, to talk about what came in at number 3 that fateful Christmas chart week. Pop stars The Rivals' Auditionees and identical twin sisters from Romania, the Cheeky Girls, with the absolutely iconic Cheeky song, Touch My Bum.
Wow. That's my, don't be shy. Touch my bum. Never knew that at all. That's incredible. Could you imagine if that had a charted at number 2?
Well, right. That's why I thought it was very important to mention the Cheeky Girls placement, because it could have ended up with One True Voice below them, which would have been so iconic.
Yeah, it would have been so ironic. It was just, I remember seeing their audition, and then they were, okay, they weren't the greatest singers, but they had a gimmick that worked.
Totally, and they had totally.
And their album was great. It was catchy.
I love the album. I love the song. I loved everything about the Cheeky Girls. I'm not going to lie. And eventually, Touch My Bum would end up with an impressive UK chart peak of number 2.
Yes.
But back to Sound of the Underground. Craig, let's get into that grimy and gritty video clip. Oh my God. Filmed just days after they were officially formed, the music video for the girls' debut single saw them in an abandoned warehouse in London, depicting various scenes of them all underground, you see what they did there, and performing together with choreography in this metal cage enclosure backed up by a band. It was explosive, regardless of how cheap it may have been, and set the tone perfectly for what Girls Aloud would become. Pop originals with a bite more infectious than even that of Spice. The thing I love most about this video clip is that, for the most part on Popstars Arrivals, the girls performed a lot of ballads on their own and, you know, were smiling for the cameras, that sort of thing. But in this video clip, they asserted their pop dominance pretty quickly and slipped into the roles of fierce pop stars very fast. Watching them each have their giant and huge pop star moment full of electric charisma was and still is goosebump material to me. I live for this song and its video. My God, Craig.
Yeah, the song is so in your face, but in a good way.
And for me, arguably maybe one of, if not the greatest Christmas number one in the UK.
Of course. And, you know, the UK is renowned for that competition of getting that Christmas number one. And they're going to go down in the history books for that reason.
Now, Craig, did you know that there are two cover versions out there of this song? And let's just say, not only are they vastly different to the original and sung by men, but they're also both very different to each other. Let's take a listen. The first, recorded in 2003 for a compilation disgustingly titled Even Better Than the Real Thing, I don't think so, comes from Irish rock band The Four of Us.
Sound of the underground, the beat of the drums go round and around into the overflow, where the girls get down to the sound of the radio, out to electric night, where the bass line jumps in the back street lights, the beat goes around and around. It's the sound of the underground.
That was just terrible.
Extremely terrible. I have no words.
What a snooze fest. But here to wake you up with the second one, however, recorded by British punk metal band Snuff. Look, I mean, at least that version by Snuff is closer to the general idea of the original than the version from The Four of Us, I guess.
Yeah, still terrible, but of the two, that is the better version. Just,
exactly. My gosh. Well, Sound of the Underground spent 4 weeks at the top of the UK singles chart and a further 15 weeks there, obviously peaking at number one and certified platinum. But it also went number one in both Ireland and Scotland, also cracking the Dutch top 10, the Swiss top 30, and both the Sweden and local Australian singles chart top 40s, peaking here on the ARIA chart at number 31.
That's terrible. We should have.
It is, but when you think about the sales of those days, that would be a hit single now.
You're right, but it should have. It should have charted better here. We didn't embrace them the way they should have been embraced.
Oh, not at all. Australia really just snubbed them entirely. And it was more so that even when they tried to come here, which when that episode comes up during the chemistry era, but even when they did try to come down here to promote biology and chemistry, there was just no radio support whatsoever. And I do remember when Call the Shots came out, there was a little bit of a campaign by fans to try and get it on one of the Hot 30s, but it just never saw a release here, so it just didn't go much further from that point. So really, radio didn't embrace them, and it didn't really give the Australian record buying and radio listening public a chance to embrace them as well.
No, I remember I was working at HMV at the time, and right. I had to import them. There was a demand for them. People were saying, have you got Girls Aloud? And because I was part of the singles department at the time, I was making sure that we were stocked with Girls Aloud.
Right. To this day, Sound of the Underground is considered as one of the single greatest pop debuts of ours or any lifetime, and had finally popped the cork on the real beginning of the Girls Aloud story. On the 12th of May 2003, our pop heroines would go on to release their second single, The Recorded Twice, because it had to be nice. No good advice. The single was re-recorded from its original to remove the word shit from one of the central lyrics. Of course, I just played you the proper explicit version, how God and Xenomania had intended for us to hear the song, and I'm glad I did, because in that original form, that lyric packs so much more of a punch with the word shit left intact. One of my favourite pop lyrics of all time, and there's one of those in almost every Girls Aloud song, just FYI. But the lyric in this I love right before the chorus. I flick my finger to the world below. Here I am, dirty hands, I don't give a damn. Shut your mouth because your shit might show. And if that's not pure lyrical genius, then I clearly don't know what is. That speaks to me on a deeper level than anybody like Bob Dylan ever has been able to. McCartney Lennon? Yeah, sorry, I'm Higgins Cooper in this house. The other lyrics I really love, first in the chorus, I don't need no good advice, I'm already wasted. I don't need some other life, cold and complicated. I don't need no Sunday trips, tea and sympathizing. I don't need no special fix to anaesthetize me.
Oh. How iconic are those lines? Oh my God, this song was incredible. I, you know, excuse my language, but I creamed my pants when I first heard this song. I went berserk. This was one of those songs I played on repeat. Any possible time I could get, it just wowed me. I didn't, this is where I wanted this same wow that I had for Sound of the Underground, but No Good Advice was everything to me. It was just incredible. It's like, oh my God, is this what we're going to get from Girls Aloud?
I've got to also admit one of the other lyrics that I really, really loved, which is right at the very end. Hell, I don't need no beauty sleep, no need to count those dirty sheep. And I don't need no bedtime prayer, because frankly, I don't even care. Poetry in motion, my friends. Absolute poetry.
Extreme. That was so good. I remember reading somewhere years ago that some of the early songwriting sessions, and they came up with a lyric, I don't like fried rice, and it obviously didn't work. I think it was the only thing maybe though could get to rhyme with advice at the time.
I would secretly love that version to appear on the internet at some point. I would love to hear that.
I'm sure that Brian Higgins and Miranda Cooper would have worked it in geniusly.
Inspired by indie rock and acts like Franz Ferdinand, while sounding a bit like My Sharona, but with a much fiercer blondie essence in its conception and delivery, it would take the girls 5 months following Sound of the Underground to come back with their sophomore single and release No Good Advice, albeit because they were looking for the perfect follow-up. And rightly so, because this continued that electric guitar theme from Sound of the Underground without sounding anything like it, further carving out the cooler, edgier pop image the girls were very quickly growing into.
Yeah, it was very 80s sounding, very blondie, very Bangles, with that touch of, I don't know, Bonnie Tyler sort of vocal on it.
Right.
Yeah, so good.
Well, No Good Advice was actually originally written for Xenomania's Miranda Cooper under the pseudonym Moon Baby, by Miranda, Brian Higgins, and Aquaslini. Yes, yes, that Aqua, my friends. So, Brian Higgins once actually said that the track was a reflection of his mood after a planned record deal between Xenomania and London Records fell through in the year 2000, really making the song about pushing on and striving for what he wanted despite what people told him to do or not to do. Now, the video, Craig, I know the girls themselves have on numerous occasions slated this clip specifically for the outfits they're wearing in it, but I love it. It is a cheap CGI beautiful nightmare and almost fits the song as perfectly as the video for Sound of the Underground fit that.
I loved what you just said then, beautiful nightmare. That's exactly what it was. And Kimberly, her fringe in that,
yes,
that clip is so iconic and so, I was so obsessed. It's like, for someone that doesn't have any hair, I was so obsessed with her fringe. I was mesmerized because with each era of the girls, I had favorite moments, and that was just one that stuck out for me. Every time I watched the clip, it was Kimberly's fringe. That was everything.
I love that. So for me, the thing that got me the most in this clip, that got me the most excited, was the fact that there was tambourine choreography.
Yes.
Adored that.
Yes.
Adored that. Obviously, the clip goes on with the girls as reappearing holograms as well, which is very exciting. There's a guy with a guitar. There's an old phone booth and a rusty old car parked next to it for the girls to drape themselves around. What isn't to love about this moment as a whole? I mean, come on, girls. It's a great video.
And Sarah smashing up the telephone booth as well. It's like, she got into it because she had that sort of, she was that rock chick.
Oh, yeah, from the get-go. Like,
so if there was anything, you know, dangerous or a bit out there, she was the one that was going to do it.
Yes. Craig, once again, we have a cover of this track, but it was performed on UK television, so never released officially. This was back in 2005 by the 1990s pop group Cleopatra, who you might remember were originally signed to Madonna's Maverick label when they first burst out onto the pop charts. This was for the TV show Hit Me Baby One More Time, where former pop stars performed two tracks each in front of a studio audience, performing their biggest hit and a cover song.
Vocals are different, but the music's very similar.
Yeah, it's just a straight up cover that's very faithful to the original. But I guess that's the thing that's done on those shows. But I still thought it was worth mentioning and playing a snippet of in the pod. Girls Aloud's No Good Advice debuted at number 2 on the UK singles chart, sadly missing out on the number 1 spot to the Ignition remix by He Who Shall Not Be Mentioned, before dropping to number 5 in its second week. The track also went number 2 in both Ireland and Scotland, as well as seeing a local Australian release, which unfortunately earned a very miserable ARIA singles chart peak of number 88.
That is terrible.
Drives me crazy. The injustice of it all. It's just... Oh. No Good Advice would also become the first piece of Girls Aloud vinyl that I would ever own, Craig, actually. Times 2, one 12-inch single that's got the girls gracing the cover, and another No Good Advice 12-inch single that simply had a black and white checkered cover. Both obviously prized possessions that I'm actually looking at right now as I chat to you. They're just sitting over there on the
fabulous.
On the 23rd of May 2003, the moment pop fans had been waiting for saw Girls Aloud release their debut album, the platinum-selling Sound of the Underground. The girls' first album would also be the last time that we would see them work with other songwriters and producers outside of Xenomania. acts like Peters and Peters, who would go on to create tracks for Aussie Holly Valance's sophomore album State of Mind, Westlife's Brian McFadden, wonderful friend of the pod and all-round pop and club music genius Steve Anderson, and quite amazingly, the Beatmasters with Alison Clarkson, aka Betty Boo. Before we get onto the music though, I would love to talk about that original artwork. The black background with the pink and green logo, the girls sporting their hated silver No Good Advice outfits, and all holding onto their microphone stands. Honestly, it's one of my fave pop artworks ever, and I think it's such a shame that what I think is the lower quality white cover that came with the album's reissue is the one that's most associated with the record now. I hate it, and although I own both versions, the artwork in my iTunes is of that OG black, green, pink, and silver cover. It just means so much more to me.
Oh, I agree. It's just like the white cover. It was like, quick, find a picture. You got to get it out in 10 minutes.
Right. Yeah, it felt very, very rushed, which it wasn't. It shouldn't have been at all because it was a reissue.
That's right. But you're right. The original cover is much, much superior. Much.
Really is. Funny story, I actually have two copies of the white cover version. So a friend of mine went to Bali and brought me back some presents, and one of them was a copy of the white Sound of the Underground reissue. However, the title didn't say Sound of the Underground. It was titled Sound of the Underground O. It was an O at the end instead of a D.
Oh my God, that's a collector's item.
And halfway through it had songs by like Britney Spears and NSYNC.
Oh, wow.
Totally random. So I've kept that because it's just so stupid. Like,
they're those dodgy, where is it from, Thailand?
From Bali.
Oh, from Bali. Those dodgy Bali, you know, CDs that you could buy for like $2.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I just couldn't bear to throw it away because the spelling mistake just makes me laugh so much.
Oh, it's probably worth money now.
It's what that cover deserved, a spelling mistake. Yeah. Musically speaking, on the record, Craig, let's talk first about the Xenomania tracks on the album, because when all things are considered, at least for me, I think that it's pretty clear that the Xenomania tracks are probably the best on here.
Yeah, I agree.
Obviously, Sound of the Underground and No Good Advice, but also planned for third single, then scrapped, Some Kind of Miracle, Stop, Love, Hate, Pointer Sisters cover Jump, and the actual upcoming third single, Life Got Cold. Now, the girls' debut album was originally going to be tracks from many other writers and producers, as Xenomania had only provided the debut single and No Good Advice. Interestingly, what happened next, Xeno's Brian Higgins, he actually once revealed that he heard two separate groups on that record with all those other artists and producers, and he wanted to take six tracks out of it and replace them with Xenomania ones, thus providing the beginnings of the greatest pop union since the formation of the Spice Girls.
That would have been an interesting format because of the history that we know now. But like most artists, experimenting with different producers and writers, et cetera, you'd get, especially on a debut album, it's just you getting to, you know, feel the sound. What,
right,
where you
they're
wanna
still
go.
Trying to figure out what kind of band they're going to be. They've only just started, and the album was created within, you know, the first 5 months of their creation. So yeah, they needed time to sort of figure out where they wanted to go, and thankfully that was Xenomania all the way.
That's right, and you know it's so unheard of now to, you know, do 95, you know, even probably higher than that. You know, 95% of your music career is the one producer and the same songwriters. It's just incredible.
Some Kind of Miracle absolutely feels like the girl group equivalent to Madonna's Beautiful Stranger. With dreamy production and a catchy chorus, there's a clear reason why this track was tossed around to be a single on more than one occasion. It was also co-written by Bewitched member Edel and was originally titled Should I Stay or Should I Go?
There was no reason why they couldn't have still released it as a single. It could have been single number 5.
It could have. I would have loved loved that. It was such a great song.
Exactly, yeah. It was such a standout from the album. It deserved to get remixed. And
there were some remixes. I think Illicit ended up doing some remixes of it that were released as promo to DJs.
Yeah.
Baby, baby, won't you give me a chance? I know you're watching and I just can't dance. Well, honey, honey, won't you give me a clue? I'm bored of hanging by the DJ box pretending.
Cute and light pop about trying to pick up a dude. This is still a really great early girl group pop moment for me. And as we both said, an absolute album highlight.
Oh, baby, let me know. Should I stay or should I go? I've always been around you now. I'm really nothing new. And if by some kind of miracle, underneath the glitter, boy, you see I'm not invisible. And anytime you wanna call, it's cool.
Although never a single, the reworked version that was due to be the new single mix ended up on the debut album reissue that would feature the album's final single, Pointer Sisters cover Jump. But we're getting a bit ahead of ourselves, or at least I am. Let's talk quickly about further Xenomania album highlights, Stop and Love Hate. Now, Stop is another great and enjoyable pop moment that borders on almost feeling like a single until you realise that apart from the chorus, the track is sung entirely by Nadine. Regardless, it's a great allowed track that I still consider a bit of an album cut classique.
Nadine being, well, what you could call lead vocal, she sang a lot of the lines in No Good Advice anyway. It's, you know, it was something that, you know, if you've got the strongest voice.
It was common practice in all the girl groups, or in all the groups, the pop groups in general, that was common practice.
They all worked together well, of course, but she did have the strongest, so she got the most lead.
We'll sleep for the wicked, no fun for the good, take it or leave it, you know that you should.
As for Love Hate, a song which over the years I have seen receive more hate than love on the internet, I gotta say, I really, really love this song. It is actually my absolute favourite album track on the debut. Love Hate, for me, is the even moodier and barely younger sister to the girls' debut single Sound of the Underground.
Don't mind the track, it's not a favourite, but it's not one that I skip.
Right, common bit of a common thing with this album.
Yeah, I'm probably more on the hate side.
when you're
on the love side.
Well, my second favourite album track from the girls' debut, however, did not come from the House of Xenomania, but rather the House of Peters and Peters, with the moody funk of All I Need, All I Don't. As a massive Madonna fan, it's hard not to hear the intentional references to her 1994 album Bedtime Stories on this track, and it's all the better for it and further explains why I gravitate still to All I Need as a great, great album track.
Yeah, that one I will agree with you. It is a great song.
Westlife's Brian McFadden, alongside Jonathan Shorten, penned album track and fan favourite Girls Aloud, Aloud spelt the so-called correct way, and produced by UK producer and remixer Graham Stack, who, FYI, produced tracks like Kylie Minogue's On a Night Like This and Tina Turner's When the Heartache Is Over. Massive tracks, and that's literally only a slice of what he's done over the years. I've always liked this track, but even with its title taking after the girl's name itself, Girls Aloud for me really just feels completely out of place within the world of the Aloud's underground. But I must admit, is saved for me totally in immediate hindsight, because after it comes the rather naff ballad Forever and a Night, which I am not a fan of. That is the only song I skip on the album.
This is where I'm going to have to disagree with you. Girls Aloud is one of my favourite songs from the album. It's incredible. I love it. It's got that good, you know, disco beat and that you know, that really catchy, sassy thing that the girls do so well. And Forever and Ever Night, I can understand why it's not a favourite. It's not my least favourite. I'm quite happy to listen to it, where there's others there that I would gladly skip over.
I'm like a man who drives a fast car to make you think they're bigger, baby, than they really are. I don't need a man who has him, got a job who sits, watching telly with his belly and a bottle of rum.
Other non-Zeno moments that I enjoy here on the album, the Tim Keller production, White Lies, definitely gives album track vibes, but it's a great album track nonetheless, and for me, not a skipper in the slightest.
No, I agree with that. White Lies is incredible.
Another one I adore is UK bonus track Everything You Wanted, a really great pop song written and produced by the Steve Anderson. I love this track and I've always thought it sits perfectly alongside album tracks like Some Kind of Miracle and Stop. Really, really lush pop song. Just adore it. Now, UK pop star Betty Boo and UK dance act The Beatmasters also wrote and produced three songs together for this record: Mars Attack, Boogie Down Love, and Love Bomb. They all sound very much like pop relatives, and although their futuristic surf pop vibes all sit quite comfortably alongside the Xenomania tracks, they seem to be almost forgotten by a lot of people and the fans. But I gotta say, justice for the Betty Boo and the Beatmasters tracks on Sound of the Underground, because I think they've aged very, very well.
Yes, I agree, all except for one.
Which one?
We're Boogie Down Love. I'm not a fan of that one at all.
Oh, I must admit, like, it's pretty naff and cheesy, but I don't skip it.
Yeah, the other two I love, but yeah, right. That's one of the ones that I'm quite happy to not hear again.
Something special about Betty Boo tracks, I must admit, that I think totally works with the debut as a whole. And like I said, they were really the only non-Xenomania tracks on the album that really sat comfortably alongside the Xeno tracks on it. I would also like to very quickly mention that Betty Boo has returned to the pop music world for the first time since 2007, I believe, with her ace new single, Get Me to the Weekend. It's actually only just dropped last weekend and is really great. Highly recommend. Boo's an amazing pop star and a gifted songwriter. So I'm very excited to see where this new era for her will take us.
Shake your booty, come let me see if you can move it. You're really looking kind of groovy. What can you handle, five cuties? Somewhere chilling out in the place.
On the 18th of August 2003, Girls Aloud released their debut's third single, Moody Xenomania Ballad, and big fan favourite, Life Got Cold. I absolutely love this song and adore the fact that it's a ballad whose first verse is essentially a rap. It's also a deeply sobering ballad about the directionless of modern life, which seems pretty brutal in places, especially now looking at it from like a 2022 aspect of the pandemic. But it's beautifully sung. This single also bears another one of my very, very favourite song lyrics written. And long ago, I'd lost my soul to some forgotten dream, but how was I supposed to know it wasn't what it seemed? And even though the last hello has left me on the floor, I don't believe in Romeos or heroes anymore. Fucking hell, pardon my French. That just gets me every single time, Craig.
How beautiful. This is also, I think, that Nicola got a little bit more of the lead. She had more than one line where she got to really showcase her voice, which was great. And I think it's good that they each were able to have some sort of lead, even though, you know, basically it was only one line, but at least they got to do that.
Well, the song would go on to receive a little bit of criticism and backlash for its alleged similarities to the Oasis track Wonderwall, so much so that Oasis songwriter Noel Gallagher was actually later credited as a co-songwriter on the track. I mean, look, whatever, it's very obvious which of these two songs I think is the real British icon, and it's not the one sung by an angry white bloke.
I think they were just saving their ass, I think, you know, just so in case he sued.
Yeah.
We text as we talk, we're running as we walk, cause we stuff our little souls away. We smoke as we choke, as we sink another coke, and we bring where it blows our mind. We skate as we date, as we slowly suffocate. We're running out of time.
The music video was directed by Phil Griffin, who had directed the previous two Aloud videos, and carried on that cheap but effective motif from both of those earlier videos, with our pop icons wandering around what seemed to be a post-apocalyptic setting of abandoned city streets and a broken-down bus.
I think Sarah became obsessed with the fringe in this one because she has a really very Kimberly fringe that I noticed.
Very severe fringe.
Yes, but it suited her.
It did. Too. It
yeah,
did.
She looked fabulous.
Sarah looked good with in all of her hairstyles.
That's right. And she was probably the most out of the
adventurous with her hairstyles.
Yeah, definitely. And Cheryl looked really cute in this clip too, because she had that really stylish bob with the fake blonde tips in it. But it really suited her.
I've Got Cold spent 9 weeks on the UK singles chart and peaked at number 3 there, with both Scotland and Ireland giving the track its highest peak of number 2 respectively. The track also charted in the Belgium top 20 and the Romanian top 100, but unlike the previous two singles, Life Got Cold did not chart in Australia when it was released here on September 29th, 2003, which was well over a month after its UK release and, unfortunately, with no local promotion. On November the 17th, 2003, Sound of the Underground was reissued with that less than impressive new white background artwork I mentioned earlier. The reissue replaced the original release's bonus tracks and Don't Want You Back with the two new Xenomania produced songs that were recorded by the gals for the silver screen, Freaky Fridays, You Freak Me Out, and Love Actually's Pointer Sisters cover, Jump. But let's have a little bit of a snippet of You Freak Me Out first.
It freaks me out. I've got to scream. I've got to shout out loud. Woo! It freaks me out like Halloween. I've got no doubt out loud.
That there lifted from the Jamie Lee Curtis smash Freaky Friday, a totally vapid and stupidly fun pop song, which sounds like it was written under the watchful eyes of Mickey and Minnie Mouse.
I love that.
It was very American, especially for that time, and although a bop that I can never skip, even with its hilarious lyrics about being freaked out by Halloween, which, given that this was for a Jamie Lee Curtis movie, seems poetically perfect, but the song didn't exactly do anything for them within that hard-to-bust US market. On the very same date the debut album reissue would see its release, Sound of the Underground's fourth and final single would drop for the movie Love Actually, a cover of the Pointer Sisters' synth-tastic jam, Jump.
When an artist does a cover, I love that they're true to the original but put their own stamp on it. And the girls did that.
They did. I mean, I'll forever view this for me as the definitive jump. The way it takes the most famous part of that Pointer Sisters original, those unforgettable synths through the chorus, then throws them into the bin and replaces them with loud, penetrative, buzzy electronics souped up with a techno-pop beat. I mean, it shouldn't have worked, but it did, and although I've heard many in Aladdin say that they're not a big fan of this cover, I absolutely love it myself, and I actually spent quite many a house party at the time playing it during DJ sets because I knew that everybody knew the words to it because of the original, so I could get away with playing Girls Aloud at every house party that I went to.
Oh, who's if it comes on the, you know, on the dance floor, who's not going to dance to it? Seriously, it's exactly. One of those fun songs.
I was spreading the gospel of the Aloud even to the munted ravers of early noughties Melbourne.
I know it's a great film, but to me, I always think of the Girls Aloud song first.
Before, same, 100%.
Before the movie.
So because the American version of the movie replaces the Girls Aloud version with the Pointer Sisters version. I bought a DVD of it, and unfortunately, it was the American version that was on the DVD. I literally threw it away. I went straight to the bin, put it in the bin, and then I went on eBay and I ordered myself one from the UK, which has the right song in it. Thank you very much. But obviously, speaking of Love Actually, that video, which brings us, of course, to the video, which was made to look like the girls' scenes were intertwined with the film that it came from, the girls managed to sneak into the Prime Minister's home through a loose bedroom window before running amok around 10 Downing Street, trying not to get caught. I believe at one point, Nadine even helps herself to a glass of water sitting on a boardroom table, which, in hindsight and in post-pandemic days, doesn't seem like a very smart idea.
This is where I fell in love with Nicola. She was so incredible. She sort of let go.
Right.
There's a couple of earlier on in the clip where she does these finger sort of dance moves that are just so cute. And I got obsessed with it. You know, I have to rewind it just to watch those little bits. But she looks like she's having a lot of fun as well.
It's a great clip. Amazingly, there is actually a version of the video that cuts out all of that Love Actually fat and is 100% pure Girls Aloud. And surprise, surprise, that's the only version I am here for, quite frankly.
Yes. Because the other clips, the three previous ones, were slightly, you know, more sort of moody. They sort of let go.
Definitely.
And basically just had some silly fun. And
silly
it worked.
Fun video.
It worked really well. They, you know, it was incredible that they got the chance to record it.
Jump peaked at number 2 on the UK charts and stayed at that spot for 3 consecutive weeks. It also peaked at number 2 in Ireland and Scotland, number 6 in Belgium, number 8 in the Netherlands, number 9 in Sweden, number 13 in New Zealand, and number 23 locally here in Australia on the ARIA singles chart, where it would be the girls' last Australian release single until Biology in 2006.
I wish it charted better, but I'm so glad it charted better than the previous two singles.
For a debut pop group album that was created in a short 5 months, Sound of the Underground has, for the most part, stood the test of time. There is some filler, definitely, but the only time that filler becomes unlistenable for me is on the dreary ballad Forever in a Night, which to me sounds more like One True Voice than Girls Aloud. But of 17 tracks in total across both the original release and album reissue, that's not bad. One total dud of a song, while the other 16 I thoroughly, although with varying degrees, enjoy. Sound of the Underground, the album, peaked at number 2 on the UK albums chart, number 6 in Ireland, number 20 in Greece, and top 60 in the Netherlands. The album would go on to be certified platinum after selling close to 400,000 copies in the UK, but it rather sadly did not chart locally here in Australia. Well, my wonderful Craig, I have to just say a very big thank you to you for joining me on this truly special episode of the pod. It has been such a wonderful treat to have you on, and I look forward to having you back for more Aloud discourse on the pod very soon.
Thank you. And thank you for having me. It's been an absolute pleasure talking about one of my favorite subjects, Girls Aloud.
Anytime, my darling. Amazing. Well, thank you again so very much, Craig. And for all of the lovely people at home listening to us now who are thinking that they would like to look you up on the socials, where can the inquiring folk find you across the internet to connect?
Okay, on Twitter, I'm at CraigFogarty42. And on Instagram, I'm at Wisteria Farm Life. And also the book blog is HappyValley_BooksRed.
Amazing. Incredible. Oh my God. Make sure you go follow Craig everywhere. And speaking of the social front, you can also find the podcast on Instagram at Aloud Anthology Podcast, all one word. You can also find me, your host, Adam Eve, on Twitter as ADEMEVE. That's Adam Eve, but all one word and spelt Adam with an E, yes. And on Instagram, it's adam.eve. I also host a weekly radio show on mixcloud.com called The Record Doctor, 5 years strong now. I do a lot of Girls Aloud specials over there as well, including my tribute to our dearly missed angel in the sky, Sarah Harding. There's a top 30 of their best songs and then another top 30 of their best B-sides and rarities. But the next Girls Aloud countdown actually airs on Mixcloud's The Record Doctor this coming Thursday night, February the 3rd, 2022, at 8 p.m. Melbourne time and right across the globe. I'll be counting down my top 20 Girls Aloud remixes. No doubt it'll be just one Tony Lemesma remix after the other.
Fabulous. Can't wait for that.
You can find out more about my radio show, The Record Doctor, by visiting the show at mixcloud.com/The Record Doctor, by downloading the Mixcloud app onto your smartphone and doing a search for The Record Doctor, or by visiting the show's official website, www.therecorddoctor.com. I also co-host the Danny and Kylie Minogue podcast, This Is Disco, with the wonderful Eliza Day, and you can listen to that wherever you're listening to this podcast right now, and you can connect with its socials at This Is Disco, all one word, on both Twitter and Instagram. But if that's all too hard to remember, and honestly, I may have already forgotten most of it myself, just visit the website, which is again, www.therecorddoctor.com. Once again, a huge, huge thank you to you, Craig, for joining me this month on You Can't Mistake Their Anthology.
Thank you, and thank you to everybody who's listened.
Come late February, Friday the 25th of February to be exact, I will be back with episode 3 of You Can't Mistake Their Anthology, where I'll be covering the girls' second album, 2004's What Will the Neighbours Say, and its singles, the girls on film DVD release, and the What Will the Neighbours Say tour from 2005. And I'm very bloody excited to keep this Aloud ball rolling. By the way, later this year and closer to the girls' actual 20th anniversary, keep an eye and an ear out because I may just be calling on some of you listening at home to share your Girls Aloud memories with me on the podcast. If that sounds like something that you'd actually like to be a part of, please head to my website, www.therecorddoctor.com, and shoot me an email from there to express your interest. I'm really excited to give all of you incredible listeners who've been so amazing already with your support of the pod a chance to cement your own Aloud memories into the world of podcasting much later on in the year. But yes, that is coming up much later in the year. But don't forget that next month, episode 3 drops Friday the 25th of February. Until then, thank you again, Craig, for such a wonderful time discussing one of the most important debut eras of the pop world that we have ever seen. I'll catch you all on The Record Doctor and This Is Disco in between the next episode of Aloud Anthology. Don't forget that this coming Thursday's episode of my weekly radio show, The Record Doctor, airing on Mixcloud February the 3rd from 8 p.m. Melbourne time, is where I'll be counting down my top 20 Girls Aloud remixes. But until then, and all that, this is Adam E. from The Record Doctor, flicking my finger at the world below and saying, see you later. Bye.
You Can't Mistake Their Anthology is a monthly pop podcast written, edited, and produced by Adam Eve for The Record Doctor.